Welcome to the Other F Word Podcast with Morgan,
Sarah,
and Melissa,
where we talk about that dreaded word, failure. Join us as we explore the messy, tragic, funny, and inspiring stories that make us human. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Other F Word Podcast. And please remember to rate and review our podcast and share with your friends. And also, you can send us any info, questions, show ideas at info@theotherfwordpodcast.com. And I also want to thank Bipasha, our producer, who's behind the scenes here, who gets very mad at me if I don't thank her. So there she is. Thank you, Bipasha. She does amazing work. And we are very appreciative to her. We're very excited to have Michelle Philgate on. Michelle is the editor of an anthology called What My Mother and I Don't Talk About, which was inspired by her amazing essay, which is the same name as the book. Her work has appeared in the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, the Boston Globe, and countless other magazines. And we're just so thankful to have you on here. I mean, your honesty, and I think your story and your putting these stories together is really going to affect a lot of lives and help a lot of people through some hard stuff they deal with. So thank you for coming on and talking to us about it. We really appreciate it, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
So maybe you can start and tell us what inspired the article for you and how that was for you to write it yourself.
Yeah. So I started writing my essay when I was an undergrad, and that was many years ago at this point. It took me well over a decade to write this essay, because when I first started writing it, it was not long after I had moved out of my mother and stepfather's house, and I was really processing what had happened to me. My stepfather was abusive, and so I was writing at first from a place of more anger and resentment, kind of figuring out what was happening. But what I didn't realize at the time was that the real story that I needed to tell was the ramifications of the abuse and what this did for my relationship with my mother, the fracture that this caused in my relationship with my mom. Mm-hmm. And that was something that took me so many years to figure out, that that was the real heart of the story. Something that helped me figure that out was years of really excellent therapy. I even thank my therapist in the back of the book. Right. And also just kind of coming into my own as a writer too, because I think often when we're writing about something that anything that is painful in our own lives, it takes a lot of strength to relive those experiences on the page. And I really needed to be in a place in my life where I felt like that was a safe and okay thing to do. So then I finished this essay in 2017, and it came out in October, right after the Me Too movement took off. So it couldn't have been better timing for publishing this essay. And so many people responded to not just the subject matter of my essay, but also the title, What My Mother and I Don't Talk About. And I soon realized that so many people, no matter how close they are to their mother or not, have something that they can't talk about with their mom.
Mm-hmm. It is such an evocative title, and can mean so much, right? It could be, yeah. There are layers to it, which I'm sure, as we saw, we see in your book, there are. The stories are so different.
They really are. And I was going for that in this book, because I think it's really important in an anthology to reflect a wide array of stories. I didn't want this to just be like all mother child abuse story situations. So for me, it was very important that we have some people who are close with their mothers, some people whose mothers are no longer alive, and focus on all kinds of silences that can't be broken for whatever reason. So that was really my main goal as the editor of this anthology.
I really love that phrase. I've never thought about that, for all those silences that can't be broken. I wonder if you could impact that or break that down a little bit more, because I think that's really it. We all have these hurts and things that we can't share in some sense, or feel like we can, even though there's connection there if we can. But what was kind of what was the common theme you saw in people, or why they held these silences together? Because I think that's a fascinating phrase you just said.
Yeah, I think it depends on the mother-child relationship. I mean, in one case, for instance, in Alexander Chee's essay, you know, he writes about being abused as a choir boy and protecting his mother from that by staying silent and not letting her know about it. You know, so that's one form of silence is when you think you're protecting your mom somehow. There's also the silence that comes from the pain of estranged relationships. Carmen Maria Machado writes about her ambivalence over whether or not she will become a mom, having to do with her estranged relationship with her mother. You know, but there's also silences that aren't so much painful, but just leaves things unsaid and make us want to know more about our mothers. And I'm thinking in particular, the final essay in this book is written by the wonderful writer Leslie Jameson. And when I approached her about writing for this anthology, she said, "While I'm so close to my mother, you know, that will be an interesting challenge to write about someone you're really close with." And I was really excited to see what she'd turn in. And she ended up writing about her mother's first marriage before her mom had her. And this ex-husband wrote a novel based on their marriage. And it's an unpublished manuscript that Leslie had access to and read to try to understand who her mom was before she became her mom. Mm. So this book interprets silence in so many different ways. There's even an essay by Juliana Baggett about her mom telling her everything, the opposite of silence, right? Her mother is
no boundaries.
Her mother, no boundaries. So there's, I think that silence right now in our culture is something that we are really focusing on because of the Me Too movement, right? We're finally articulating things that couldn't be said for whatever reason, whether it's painful or not. But in regards to the Me Too movement, obviously that's painful. But my goal with this book was to reflect all kinds of silences, the painful ones, the ones that are just like not easy to understand or articulate for whatever reason that is in the mother-child relationship.
Since we keep talking about this essay, and we really should have at the beginning of the conversation explained what the have you explained what the essay was about? I'm wondering if you can just quickly give an overview.
Yeah, so it's the essay is about my stepfather being abusive toward me, but the crux of the essay is really about the longing that I have as a daughter to have a better relationship with my mom, and so it was a really painful essay to write. It was so difficult to return to the scenes of my teenage years when a lot of this was happening and to relive these experiences on the page. And to not just relive them, because anyone can do that in writing a diary entry, right? But when you're writing an essay, it's art. You're creating a narrative out of your own history, out of your own life. So figuring out which details to take and distill into this, I think it's a 2,300 word essay. So it's like poetry in some ways, and trying to figure out which images and which moments you use from everything that's happened to you to show this the fracture that this caused in the relationship with my mom. And so that was really challenging. But something that happened was I studied at the Tin House Writing Workshop with Joanne Beard, who's one of my favorite writers, and why I started writing essays to begin with. She wrote this perfect essay collection, in my opinion, called The Boys of My Youth, that I really recommend. And one of the things that Joanne taught me when I was still writing this essay was that every person has a light and a shadow, right? So we don't want to make cartoon villains out of people. And in a lot of my earlier drafts, all I could focus on was the ugliness of my stepdad, like not, you know, physically, but just the ugliness of his personality and what he did. And so when she said that to me, that kind of cracked open the essay and helped me come up with this central image of this jewelry box that he made for me. And that ended up being something that was took a prominent place in this piece and helped me piece moments together. So that was really interesting to me.
And I'm curious, when you originally started writing it, were you writing it with the idea that that other people are going to see it? Were you writing for yourself? How did that kind of play into your writing of it in some sense?
Yeah, actually, I don't think I was thinking of an audience in mind when I was first writing it. I think you have to kind of trick yourself into thinking that no one will ever read it if you're going to write about something that's mm-hmm. so harrowing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what's interesting, and I actually haven't talked about this in other interviews yet, so you guys are hearing this first, is that when I first wrote like the very early draft of this when I was still an undergrad, I showed it to some of my family members on my mom's side of the family, and it got passed around my family. So
wow.
They saw it years ago, and that led to like some, that made things difficult between my mother and myself for many years. So she had known, I don't know if my mother read it at that time, but other family members had. And so I had already broken the silence about it before this came out.
And did you receive support from the other family members to continue yes. on the journey of writing it?
Yes, I feel so grateful that my family has been extremely supportive. And in fact, the book is dedicated to both of my grandmothers, Mimo and Nana. And I say in acknowledgement, they're the strongest women I know. They really, they've been more like mothers to me than grandmothers. I really love them so much. So
I think that's actually a really important point. And I know as a therapist working with families, often when there is that fractured relationship, as you so beautifully describe it, finding other kind of replacement people to offer that kind of nurturance or love. Of course, it's not the same as, what you want from your mom, but to have that in grandmas or aunts, or even family friends that you can receive some of that love and nurturance and support that you aren't able to get. So I think that was really powerful.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm a big believer in like making your own family or finding within your family people who can be mother figures for you. But I also believe in learning how to mother ourselves, because that's something an essay I'm actually working on right now, because I feel like it's so important to not expect all of our nurturing to come from one person. And as adults, we need to know how to care for ourselves and how to nurture ourselves. And we can't place all of those expectations on a single person. So that's something that I've been thinking about a lot in writing and editing this book as well.
And I'm curious if you could speak to this a little. Did you try to communicate this to your mom or have some repair in your relationship before you got to the point of writing the essay? I know you said it took 10 years, which is so long, and that you were doing a lot of deep work in therapy.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you were able to try to work on that before it was published.
Well, yeah, the essay took even more than 10 years to write, well over a decade. But I definitely tried talking to her, and there's even a line in the essay where I talk about how I talked we talk, but it's not enough, because there's a difference between like just talking and having people actually listen to you. That's a whole different kind of conversation. And so a conversation where denial is at the forefront is not the kind of conversation that allows silences to be broken and really listened to, right? Like sometimes no matter how much we try to articulate something that's really painful, that person can't hear it for whatever reason. So
does that matter though? Because I wonder sometimes if it's just about speaking your truth. I mean, sometimes it's just about, continuing this metaphor of silences and breaking silences. Sometimes it is just about breaking the silence of your own. Do you feel like ultimately, in an ideal world, I guess we all want to be heard and validated, but does it really matter?
That's a good question. I think it depends on the person. For me, it very much matters. The one thing I want more than anything in this world is for my mother to accept and acknowledge the fact that I was abused. But she can't do that because she's still married to the man who abused me. So that would be like crumbling her entire foundation. That would be like changing her current existence. Right. And you know, right. So right. She can't acknowledge that. The denial is a form of self-protection for her.
How do you think you learned how to nurture yourself, given that you weren't really given any nurturing? Like, is that something innate?
That's a good question. I mean, I think, like I said, I really was nurtured by my grandmothers, so I was getting right. nurtured. I was nurtured, you know, but I think we all have to learn what nurturing ourselves means. I think it's different for every person. For me, it's the idea of self-care, which, you know, is talked about so often in therapy and in general. I think for me, it's like understanding, recognizing my limits. You know, I definitely struggle with anxiety and depression. And so it's how I take care of my body. It's, you know, making time to exercise, to like rest, to not constantly be stressed out, which is kind of my general mode. Is I have, you know, I'm often feeling like a lot of pressure on myself to constantly go, 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 go. So it's about, you know, really, I think that nurturing yourself means understanding who you are and understanding your own limits and trying to constantly like take care of yourself, whatever that means to you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It requires a presence with yourself, and I think also valuing yourself.
Yes.
Right. Because that, I think, is ideally what a parent gives a child, which is that mirroring of you are worth it, you are wonderful, I like you, I want to take care of you, I want to give to you. And so if you don't get that, you have to get it somewhere else.
I agree with that. And one of the things I say, the opening of my essay is actually, our mothers are our first homes, and that's why we're always trying to return to them, to know what it was like to have one place where we belonged, where we fit. And I think a lot of learning how to mother yourself is understanding that you fit in the world regardless of what your relationship is with your mother, you know, that you are your own person with your own agency and that you do belong.
I love that line. You got me at that line. It's like, hit me in my stomach. I just thought that was so poignant and powerful. Maybe
thank you.
Can you read that again? You probably know it, but I think if our listeners can hear it.
Yeah. And so our mothers are our first homes, and that's why we're always trying to return to them, to know what it was like to have one place where we belonged, where we fit.
So beautiful.
It literally brings tears to my eyes. It really is. It is really powerful. But I think as you're talking about, you know, where you fit, where you belong, I mean, and figuring out how to self-nurture and practice self-care, I think the other important thing is knowing and understanding yourself. And I'm wondering, was therapy the only way that you, or the one main way that you got to that point, that you got to know yourself so well, or were there other practices you had?
There were definitely other practices, therapy being probably the most important, because therapy forces you to really face yourself and face your inner struggles and name them and not look away from them. But that's something that writing, especially writing creative nonfiction, any memoir-based writing, forces you to do as well, is to not look away from things, not deny things, to really confront things. So I think writing is the main way that I've really understood who I am. And also reading. I've been a lifelong reader. Ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be a writer, and I read all the time. So other people's stories have really helped me figure out what's important in my life and who I want to be and what I want to do. So it was other writers who had broken silences that gave me the courage to break my own.
Well, and I love that too, because I love what you're talking about, like looking at our own. The way I look at that is like you're saying, look at our own darkness, because I really love that you said we all have a shadow and a light, you know, because we all have that. And I'm just wondering, Because that idea just fascinates me, especially when we're talking about someone doing horrible things. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's hard to see that light, and sometimes in ourself we want to see only the light, you know, and not look at our darkness. So I find that fascinating. I remember I was talking to somebody about Michael Jackson, and tell me if I'm crazy about this. Someone was like, you know, can't ever listen to his music, and I was like, and that may be true, but I was like, at the same time as he had this darkness that was doing horrible things, he was creating music out of a beautiful part of himself. And those two things are present in him, which is hard for us to kind of understand, that there's this beautiful side of him that's connecting people and making this beautiful art out of it. And then there's this dark side of him that's doing horrible things. And those two things are both there. So I just find it's fascinating that you talk about that you brought that up, you know, because we do have these, all of us do, and in different degrees, but it's hard when someone's doing something that's very abusive to see that sometimes. So I think it's very powerful of you to notice that.
Yeah. That's all thanks to Joanne Beard pointing that out, you know, in the class I took with her, but it's true. I mean, you brought up Michael Jackson. I mean, a theme in the past several years is, as we've heard about all of these celebrities who have done awful things, you know, it's really hard. It's like, how do you separate the great art that they've made from the person, right? Mm-hmm. But you do kind of have to hold both things together, because the person who created it might have done terrible things, but they also might have made incredible art. So how do you grapple with that?
Well, we've talked about this before, that you know, someone who is abusive has probably been abused themselves somewhere down the line, right? And so they have a story, and yet maybe you can't have access to their story because they're just acting it all out. But you know, and I don't know if you've ever had a chance to know your stepfather differently or confront him. I know a lot of people struggle with confronting their abusers, and sometimes the results are surprisingly, I think, therapeutic and healing, and sometimes they're even more painful. But I loved in your writing when you described the box, the wooden box that he made for you, a jewelry box. I think that really illustrated that there was that good part to him, you know, that he, whether it was generous or thoughtful or sweet or, you know, something positive, and yet, and you took it, but you put in your ugliest jewelry or your baubles or things you wouldn't wear, you know? And your writing is just, it has a way of making you feel like you're in it, that me as the reader is in it with you. So powerful.
Thank you so much.
I really took that jewelry box. It's funny because my interpretation of it was very different. I took that to mean almost symbolically, like he was telling you to keep it a secret. I don't know why I felt like the jewelry box was, you know, I saw it more just as a box of secrets that needed to be kept closed. So did it mean that for you at all, or was it just purely something that he gave you that you felt you had to keep, that you...
Well, I think symbolically in the essay, I talk about the my mother teaching me to keep secrets inside. So it's more that, like, that box represents, like, you know, keeping things to yourself, not letting the world know them. You know, I talk about growing up in a Roman Catholic family where you keep secrets. That's what you do until, like, and you try to sweep them under the carpet until you trip on them. Right.
So, I love that line too. Yeah.
So I think that the box to me was more like metaphorically speaking about my, you know, me being taught by my mother to keep secrets.
Right. And out of interest, you still have it?
You know, I don't even know what happened to it, to be honest.
Do you feel like there was any positive? I feel weird even asking the question, because I mean, I don't know. I just wonder if there was, I'm wondering if there was some sort of maturing that happened in your relationship with your mother as a result of the experience of abuse.
In my relationship with my mother, no, I wouldn't say anything positive happened between my mother and myself out of this. I would say that I am where I am and I am who I am because of things that have happened to me. I mean, we all are made up of our experiences, right? They don't necessarily define us, but they do influence us and what we end up doing. And would I care so much about breaking silences if I hadn't experienced what I went through? I don't know. It's hard to say because I would be a different person if I didn't go through what I went through. So
you did seem quite feisty, though. I thought there was a, there was a strength in you that I really love to read about, you know, that maybe was there before, or maybe you learned to channel a little bit more, which I love. I love seeing a feisty little girl who can not listen and, you know, and then the other piece about how you were drawn to acting, that you, you like to escape to maybe something more dramatic where there is a resolution at the end.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was really into acting, especially in high school. I did a lot of the high school plays. And it was really fun to just be on stage and be a different character, a whole different person. And that's something that I enjoy when I'm writing. You know, I'm currently studying fiction at NYU. And so I've been enjoying inhabiting that space again of creating a character. You know, when you're on stage, it's not a character you're creating necessarily, although it's a collaboration with the playwright, because you're still creating it somehow, you're interpreting it the way they wrote it. And when I'm writing fiction now, I'm completely creating that character, although I might be taking elements from my own life. So I kind of see it as what I was doing back then in high school too, in some ways, a natural extension of it. But yeah, I think
that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. So it was really fun being on stage, and I really miss it. But now when I give readings, when I read from my work, I feel like I'm channeling that high school self when I'm up there reading.
For sure, absolutely. I'm basically curious as the man here, I'm wondering, did you find that men had a different experience with their mother? Was it very similar, or was it kind of related differently in some way than you found with women?
You know, that's an excellent question. Yeah. So there are four men in my book: Alexander Chi, who I already mentioned, and then Andre Osimhon, whose piece originally appeared in the New Yorker, is, it's a gorgeous essay called "Are You Listening?" And it's about growing up with a deaf mother and what that means. And then Brandon Taylor's piece is about his mother who passed away and who was abusive toward him, but he writes about her with astonishing tenderness and really makes her come alive on the page. He really shows her as a three-dimensional human being. And I think that's very hard to do about someone that you know so well, is to make them a person that really comes alive on the page, and he does that. And then the other piece is Casey Lehman, who wrote an incredible memoir called Heavy, and his essay is still talking about that, about his relationship with his mom and writing his memoir. I think, you know, the reason I included men in this book, it very much could have been just a mother-daughter book, but I didn't want that, because I think that the mother-son relationship has its own complications.
Yeah, and super fascinating.
And I'd be very curious to hear what you think as a man, because I feel that it's even harder in our culture for men to break these silences, whatever the silence might mean for them. It's hard for them to be emotional and talk about relationships in a complex way, because our society doesn't encourage that, which is ridiculous. And that's something that I wanted to dismantle in this book. So I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I do think being on this podcast, I've gotten a lot better at it, you know, and I'm as an individual, I see the sometimes the things I'm afraid of, if I speak them, I find connection there, or if I hold them, I find disconnection. So I'm starting to make that move, and I think I'm getting better about talking about it, but I think there still is a sense of that men don't they keep more inside. You know, I was lucky. I have a really good relationship with my mom, and that's been helpful through life, and you know, so it's interesting. It's an interesting thing, but I do think it's difficult. I mean, so there are differences in some sense, but in the same sense, we all want the same thing. We all want to feel loved. We all want to feel connected. We all want to feel worthy, you know? So those basic core things that we're struggling with, that our parents are, like you were saying, that initial home that kind of, you know, are such a significant relationship, that there's just a lot of stuff there. So I think it's fascinating. So I bet it is harder for men to talk about that in a general sense, you know? So I think it's really cool that you added those stories to make it something that we can be a part of.
Yeah. Yeah. I really wanted to open up the conversation for as many people as possible. That was the goal with this book.
Something that I think is fascinating that people are often trying to figure out or struggle with is the idea of radical acceptance, especially around mothers or fathers or significant relationships. So radical acceptance is basically radically accepting someone in all their limitations, in all their brokenness, in all their failures, in all their mess, in all their tenderness and beauty and strengths. And, you know, it doesn't come easily and it doesn't come quickly. I think for me, it's something I've learned to do personally in my own therapy and professionally helping others to, and that, it's a place, it's an idea to arrive at, and it takes some work and some willingness. And, I wonder if, you know, you saw that at all in some of your essays or even with yourself, where you see the imperfection. There's so much pain, there's so much disappointment, and yet sometimes if you can radically accept who your parent is, and they not even did the best they could, but just radically accept them, that you can have a different kind of relationship with them or understanding about them. I don't know if that resonates with you at all.
No, it absolutely does. And I think that is a theme in this book. I'm really glad you brought it up. I mean, I'm thinking of, there's this great essay by Kathy Hanauer, and it's probably the funniest essay in the book. It's called My Mother's Gatekeeper. And it's about how her dad is really lovable, but domineering, and made it kind of impossible for many years for her to have a one-on-one conversation with her mom. Mm-hmm. So whenever she called the house, her dad would pick up the phone. And, you know, like even when she wanted to ask her things that like a daughter would only want to ask a mother, her dad would butt in. Mm-hmm. And her mom and dad even shared an email address for many years. So it was just really hard to get her one-on-one. But she finally gets to have a conversation with her mom. And there is a lot about radical acceptance in that essay, and realizing who her mom is and who her dad is too, which is interesting. Like, dads come up definitely throughout this book too. It's not just about the moms. The dads are often in the background or very much involved somehow. So,
well, it's those primary, go ahead, continue.
Oh, no, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say it's those primary relationships that, you know, are so impactful and so powerful. I mean, you know, you talk about the home, a mother's, you know, womb, I guess, being the first home. And those parental relationships are the first relationships, and they're so powerful because of that. And we spend the rest of our lives, I think, trying to, you know, unpack and kind of work through a lot of those dynamics. But there's, I mean, yeah. You know, seeing as this podcast is about failure, you know, there's so much failure, I guess. There can be so much failure in the parent-child relationship.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, I think there's also so much potential. And I'm curious about your thoughts on failure as it relates to, you know, your relationship and the, you know, the authors in your book, and just in general with regards to this subject of, you know, mothers and daughters, parents and children.
Well, I think with failure, there's also always hope. And maybe that's overly optimistic of me, but that's why I chose to end this essay collection with an extremely hopeful essay. Mm-hmm. Because I do think that, especially when there's failure, when we're surrounded by it, there are opportunities to transcend that failure, to understand it, to still go about our lives, and to move on from that failure. As you talked about with radical acceptance, you know, that as well. And I actually wanted to share one story about why this book is so worth it and why there is hope with failure. So there's one particular essay by Naomi Munavira about growing up in an immigrant family. And her mother was mentally ill, and they had an extremely difficult relationship because of that. And when she wrote this essay before the book came out, she shared it with her mother. And her mother wrote back the most beautiful email that we included as a postscript at the end of Naomi's essay about how she's so proud of her and she feels like this essay will help so many people. So there again, you know, I think like there could have been failure in that story with her sharing it with her mom. Her mom could have had a really bad reaction, but instead, you know, she sent this piece to her mom with hope, and she got the best possible response back. So I think it, you know, it's failure and hope are on the same spectrum, and I really like to think of them as coexisting.
We love that. We love to link those together because it's true, you know, and as long as people are brave enough to shed and, you know, the light on the failure, there's always hope for it to change or for some repair.
Exactly. And I also don't, I feel like, you know, all of us experience so many failures over and over again in our lives, but also particularly in our relationships, and especially with the mother-child relationship. There are so many tiny and huge failures involved in every mother and child relationship. So the best we can do is to keep communicating about these things and, you know, acknowledge when we failed or when they failed, you know, to break these silences and not let them just build up inside of us, because a failure to communicate is the worst kind of failure there is, in my opinion.
It really is. It really is so beautifully said. And again, as parents, for us to show our failures to our kids and show that we can, you know, mess up and then, you know, wrap it up and fix it and come back together and talk about it. It's modeling for kids to know how to do it, but it's a lot of new work for people. So I love that your book shows all sorts of different relationships, not just negative, not just positive, but a blend of all of it. 'Cause that's really what these important relationships are about.
Absolutely. And one final thing I'd add is that I've been meeting a lot of strangers on book tour, and I've met quite a few moms who have bought this book for their kids so that they can have a book club together and talk about things. So that's made me really happy to see that this can lead to important conversations between moms and their children.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. And as you say, I mean, the failure to communicate is probably one of the biggest failures of all. So that's exactly why we like to have these conversations, because it is just even just creating the space for them and helping people find the language, you know, just that starting point is can be helpful. And I think that's what your book does in spades. So thank you so much for that. And where can people find you if they want to learn more about you and get your book and read some of your stuff?
So my website is just my name, Michelle with one L, Philgate. .com. So MICHELEFILGATE.com. And that has links to my social media as well. I'm often on Twitter and Facebook too. So, but my website has links to a lot of my writing as well, and also links to where you can buy my book. But I love it when people buy the book from an indie bookstore, because I was an indie bookseller for many years. So
awesome. Yeah, definitely do that. We will put your website link in the notes. So go click there, go to your indie bookstore and buy the book. Michelle, thank you so much for sharing your stories. I mean, I think that's how we learn and grow and heal ourselves. So I think it's beautiful you did that and putting that out there. So, and thank you so much for joining us here today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. This has been a wonderful conversation. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Michelle. All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Other F Word Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast, and visit us online at theotherfwordpodcast.com. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And we'd love to hear your stories of struggle with failure. You can contact us at info@theotherfwordpodcast.com. See you next time.